Recording has started.
Thank you, Jonathan. Will you go ahead?
Sure, then. Right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the GNSO Council meeting today, Thursday, 21st of May. We've got a full agenda, so we might as well move through it quickly. But first, under item 1.1, let's make sure we capture everyone present. So, Glenn, can you confirm how we'll take the roll?
We'll take the roll from the people on the chat, Jonathan, on the Adobe Connect. And just to mention that we have apologies from Tony Holmes, who's given his proxy to Osvaldo Nova. We have apologies from Marilla Maciel, who has given her, who has put in her place Rafik Damit as temporary alternate. David Cake is absent. His proxy goes to Ed Morris. Avery Doria is absent, and her proxy goes to Amar El-Sadar. And we have Carlos Gutierrez, who is absent with apologies. May I just remind everybody to make sure that you say your name before speaking, and also to mute your lines if you're not speaking so as to avoid any noise. Thank you very much, Jonathan, and over to you.
Thanks, Glenn. I'm going to ask you for an audio test because of the comments in the chat. Can you confirm the audio is clear?
I'll ask the operator.
Okay. Then what I will ask, I just wonder how we deal with this. But let me move us through a couple of initial items. I'm just wondering how to get a clear audio signal here. Maybe as simple as...
I'm looking on that, Jonathan.
Okay, what we're going to do then is I'm going to work through the first items and then just the administrative items, and then I'll do a restart of the send, see if I can get a clear computer audio. If I cannot do that, I will then go on to a telephone connection. So let's deal with the first practical issues point, first of all, and then we'll see where we go from there. Can I have a call for any statement of interest updates? Are there any statement of interest updates? Seeing none, item 1.3, any comments or points on the agenda? Seeing none, I move to item 1.4 and have to apologize again for the status of the minutes. I'll do a catch-up and get these sorted out. It's something that seems to have just slipped through the cracks over the last few meetings. Of course, you have access to full transcripts and audio, but it's still a piece of housekeeping that should be sorted out, and apologies for my part in that. With respect to the action items under item 2, I'm going to pick out just two or three of these and highlight those points. We are some way into the planning for the Buenos Aires meeting, and you should have seen a draft schedule shared with the council. Please do comment or give input if you have any concerns or issues with that. One point I would like to highlight to you is that we have typically over recent times held a Tuesday evening meeting at the end of the constituency or stakeholder group day, the constituency day on Tuesday. There is a very clear purpose to those meetings, and that purpose is to enable the council and any relevant members of the stakeholder groups, the chairs or others from the constituencies or stakeholder groups, to come together and discuss any concerns or issues over motions on the council agenda. It is clear in Buenos Aires that we will have more than one motion on the agenda that may require some discussion. In the last meeting in Singapore, we had some motions, there was little or no controversy or specific issues to discuss there. So I just want to encourage all of you to make sure you are aware of that Tuesday evening slot and make your various groups aware of that if there are particular issues to discuss. Clearly, the one sizable motion that we can see coming that we'll discuss a little later, perhaps in more detail, is that relating to the transition and the work of the cross-community working group on this IANA stewardship transition. So please be aware of that Tuesday evening slot and the necessity to participate there and reflect the views of your groups. I've got some typing noise, so I've got an open microphone. If you could please mute your line. With respect to the GAC communique, item further down on the list, I'm not sure if you have independent scroll. Can you confirm to me, Glenn, if or everyone has independent scroll on this?
This is Marika. Yes, everyone should be able to scroll themselves.
Thank you, Marika. So, or you can scroll down as we go through this yourselves, and I'll touch on the item dealing with the GAC communique. We've made some progress there, not as fast as some of us might have envisaged or perhaps liked. But we've added a couple of volunteers to the group, and hopefully we can get a bit of momentum there. There's a matter of checking the latest template and populating that with items from the Singapore communique as a test exercise, and then really just weighing in a little bit and thinking about how we can make that effective. We will discuss that with our GAC colleagues in Buenos Aires, and I expect that we can hopefully process the GAC communique via this mechanism post-Buenos Aires, but we need to do a bit of homework in advance of that. It's probably worth highlighting that we did put in those comments on the budget, so thanks to those who contributed and worked on that. I know it wasn't everyone's most familiar area, but it was good to see that we managed to do that in a relatively short time. I think AMMO was significantly helpful there, so thanks to all of you who did contribute to that. And then I think I'd like to make a couple of remarks on this CWG on auction proceeds. You'll be aware that we sought expressions of interest. We then went out and sought volunteers or interested persons for a drafting team. And then there was an email from Steve Crocker indicating some thoughts and creating a bit of controversy around how this might take place. I've actually spoken to Steve sort of one-to-one in the interim, and I think it's much clearer now to him and to me how that he would like to contribute, but is very respectful of the work that's going to go on in the cross-community working group. A couple of other developments have taken place. There was a so-called SOACSG leaders call this morning, and it's been confirmed that at the high interest session on Monday, there'll be an opportunity, Monday in Buenos Aires, there'll be an opportunity to have a discussion in and around views on the auction proceeds. And I think it makes sense there to try and perhaps contribute to that by setting up a number of initial questions. So there'll be a high interest session on that. And think we will also run a second session on the Wednesday, which is likely to be a form of workshop. And both of these two, this, one the discussion meeting and one the workshop, should provide very valuable content and input from the community as a precursor to getting the drafting team going. So it's been a little disjointed. There have been various initiatives and communications going on, but I'm hoping that we'll bring it all together in Buenos Aires and set the groundwork in place to get this cross-community working group going in the period between Buenos Aires and Dublin, and possibly in earnest from Dublin. The concern there, and one of the issues, is that everyone is very busy and not everyone is equally informed. Amir, your hand is up. So any comments or questions on those action items, and in particular possibly the last one on auction proceeds? Amir, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan, this summer. Yeah, specifically on the auctions proceeds issue. I was wondering whether in principle is would there be an objection from Steve or the board to sort of include what he indicated in his letter of perhaps the existence of other considerations besides what the cross-community working group would recommend. Well, to make my question clearer, Steve did indicate in this letter that there would be other considerations that the board would have to take into consideration when deciding what to do with the proceeds of the auctions. Would there be any objection from the board in sort of communicating what those considerations may be to the cross-community working group so that they may deliberate on them, perhaps along with board liaisons similarly to what's going on, for example, on the cross-community working group for ICANN accountability? Thanks.
Good point. I'm not going to attempt to answer for the board in any sense, but what I would expect, I would anticipate that there, to your second point, that there would be one or more board liaisons to the cross-community working group. But probably more importantly at this stage, when we do the work, when we start to kick off via a workshop in Singapore, I'd expect that would be a time to invite Steve or another appropriate representative from the board to share any thoughts and indications, and then to have those discussed in a sort of open, transparent, and appropriate forum. So that's what I'm hoping we'll be able to get to happen, is rather than just a couple of emails or something where things can get potentially misinterpreted or misunderstood, is to actually invite the sharing of ideas via either that high-interest session and or the workshop. Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, thanks. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you well, Philip.
Okay. Yeah, just to clarify, we're still, while there will be this opportunity for some initial discussion at that high interest session on Monday after the opening, we're still planning on going ahead with the cross-community working group. Is that correct?
Yes, Philip, unambiguously so.
Okay.
Perhaps slightly slower than some might have.
Okay, fine. I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
So, Philip, thanks. Yes, that's the plan and intention, and perhaps slightly at a slightly slower pace than some might have initially envisaged, but certainly to get going with it in a well-informed way, and also recognizing the limits on community resources, and in so doing, say that this is a particularly important topic, but probably not as urgent as some other topics being dealt with right now. Answer to Anna's question on the chat, no, the charter drafting team hasn't yet been even formed, let alone begun its work yet, although there has been a call for volunteers and there are a number of names in the hat. So I think it's appropriate to put out some form of written update in very shortly to clarify what's going on, including this high interest session. Okay, good. So if we could come back to the main agenda then, and what I suggest we do is hear an update from what I suggest we do is go straight to item 5, where we take an update from Thomas Rickett on the cross-community working group on ICANN accountability, which will give me the opportunity to drop off, recheck my connection, and come back on in order to deal with item 4. So I'm going to drop off for a minute or two whilst Thomas provides you with the update on item 5, and I suggest I hand the chair over to Vice Chair Volker Greinen until I rejoin. So, Volker, if you could take over, Thomas can provide his update, and I'll rejoin shortly. Can you just confirm, Volker, you're happy to do that? And Thomas, you're in
a position. Thanks, John.
Volker, you're breaking up on me. Have you already handed over to me? This is Thomas.
Thomas, audio isn't good, and yours is loud and clear, so why don't we let you just go ahead with the update, and if you could chair or manage the questions, any questions or Q&A that result from yours, and I'll join shortly.
Thank you very much. More than happy to do that. Hello, everybody. This is Thomas Rickert, and I'd like to give you a brief update on where we are with the CCWG. As you will surely or hopefully have noted, we have put out a report for public comment a few days back. The public comment period is open until June 3rd, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe staff can put the link to the report in the notes space so that you have easy access to it. I should say that the report does not yet represent consensus positions by the CCWG. That would be premature. We have been working on improving ICANN's accountability along the lines of what I have presented to Council during its earlier meetings. So we have established requirements. We have defined escalation paths for the community to exercise certain powers. We've been working on a revised mission core values and commitments that would go into the ICANN bylaws. We've been working on the concept of so-called fundamental bylaws for those areas of the bylaws that we felt need to be made much more robust against changes by the ICANN board, so the community would have the opportunity to veto changes to normal bylaws, but would need to be asked for explicit approval when it comes to fundamental bylaws. We have put in voting thresholds for exercising these community powers. We've worked on an improved IRP, independent review process. We've been working on the reconsideration process. So we've been looking at all sorts of areas in which ICANN's accountability can or should be improved to reflect the historic relationship with the U.S. government. For some areas, we have come up with alternatives because the CCWG was not sure which option to prefer. So for every question, we more or less have a reference option or an option that got most traction inside the CCWG, but there's no decision made yet. And we would very much like to encourage the community to chime in and provide guidance as to whether it thinks that we are moving into the right direction or whether we need to tweak the solutions that we've put in our report or even think of new proposals that we haven't yet considered. So this public comment period is decisive for our progress and ultimately for our success. It is quite a long report, but we have a very punchy and and to the point executive summary, which has been recently published in, I think, 5 or 6 languages. So we're trying to be as inclusive as we can with this. We have held 2 webinars and answered questions that came from the community. We have created a question and answer document, which we're going to populate with more questions and answers as we move along, so that the areas where we have not been as clear as we should be will be more explained for the community to better understand what we're doing. We have been working on graphics to show the processes that we have envisaged for, let's say, recalling or removing directors, for asking for reconsideration of budget, strategic plan, and operating plan, and so on and so forth. We are currently in the process of creating videos that speak to certain topics of relevance to make it easier for the community to understand where we are. So we're doing all this in order to enable the community to make informed decisions during the public comment period and to provide us with guidance as to whether we need to adjust our report and in what areas. And then hopefully we will be able to have extensive and informed discussions with the community at the upcoming ICANN meeting in Buenos Aires. But in the meantime, I would really like to encourage you to provide feedback, even if it's not final feedback that you or your respective groups are going to put into the public comment box. But if you have questions or concerns, please do raise them now. We think that many questions can be, or many concerns can be removed by just explaining better what we have been doing so far. So please don't be shy. Please do ask questions. That will increase the probability of us coming to a consensus solution in the foreseeable future. I should also say that we have been working extensively with external law firms to make sure that the proposals that we're working on are compliant and that what we have defined in terms of requirements can actually be implemented under Californian law. And the reference model that we're currently considering, which we tagged the reference model in our report, is to make ICANN a true membership organization. It is already a membership organization now, but it doesn't have any members yet. But our plan is that we would have a community council, that the provisional wording that was used for it, where the community has voting powers. And in order to exercise such voting powers, the community needs to have a legal vehicle. And we have been informed by the lawyers that we're using that the easiest way to get this done would be the use of so-called unincorporated associations. These are very lightweight, easy to set up legal entities that would ideally be set up by all SOs and ACs, that would not have any assets, and therefore they wouldn't make an attractive target for the election. In fact, we've been reassured that the legal risks would not be higher than they currently are for the community. So, you know, it shouldn't be much of an issue there. They're easy to set up, and they would sort of be the legal tool for the SOs and ACs through which they can exercise community powers. They would not replace SOs and ACs. The SOs and ACs would not transform into those, so the situation would remain almost as it is, only that they would have this additional legal vehicle which would need to be set up to exercise certain powers. There has been a lot of uncertainty around this concept, and this is why I'm explaining a little bit about this concept. The big upside of using this concept is that all the community powers that we've been working on would be fully enforceable by using that concept. We have looked at and are still looking at alternative implementation models, but they would not have such robust enforceability. And so I really do encourage you to take a look at that, to let me or let us as a group or as co-chairs know whether you see any difficulties with that. Ask questions that you might have, because it would be very unfortunate if all the volunteer time and the money spent on external counsel's advice would be wasted in part or in total if we could not make progress based on misunderstandings surrounding the concepts that we're working on. Again, we have understood our mission, and that's in the charter, to work on accountability mechanisms that help to replace the historic relationship that ICANN had with the U.S. government. And therefore, we understood that it would be our task to look at robust and enforceable accountability mechanisms, which currently we don't have, and therefore we came up with the legal solution that would best suit this purpose. I think I should pause here and hear whether there are any questions from councillors. Jonathan.
Thomas, before I ask you, can you confirm the quality of my audio, please?
The quality is almost perfect.
Wunderbar. All right. So that's good. Thomas, I was wondering, and this is, I don't want to open up a hornet's nest, but did you discuss in this sort of membership, understanding these unincorporated associations, they then are members, I assume, or perhaps understand, and then obviously we are here in a sort of GNSO context. Did you talk about whether those members would all have equivalent standing, or is there possibility that different members would have different votes, if you like? Was that something that was covered at all? So I guess the question is twofold. Could you confirm my understanding, and B, could you confirm whether or not that's been discussed? Thanks.
I'm more than happy to answer both questions. With respect to the question, your assumption is correct. These unincorporated associations would be the members. We do need legal personalities as members. They can either be natural persons or legal persons. And since we don't want, or as to our current thinking, no individuals, i.e. no persons, should become members of ICANN, we chose the option of having a legal entity, which would be the unincorporated association. And that would be needed because, as you know, the SOs and ACs, the way they are currently structured, are not legal personalities. So we can't use them on an as-is basis. With respect to the second question, our current thinking and proposal is that all SOs and ACs, except for RSEC and ESSEC, would have 5 votes. And RSEC and ESSEC would have 2 votes. We have been discussing different options. So there has been the idea of having 4 votes for the organization, which could then be allocated, let's say, in the GNSO to each stakeholder group. But ultimately, the preferred option at the moment is to have 5 votes, because that would make it easier for the likes of ALEC or the GAC, because they could then have 1 vote per world region.
Thanks, Thomas. That's helpful. Are there any other questions or comments for Thomas on the work of the CCWG at this stage? Amir, go ahead.
Well, thanks, Jonathan, and thank you, Thomas. I was wondering about something, and to be honest, I haven't gone through the proposal very thoroughly yet. I hope to over the next maybe week. There's a section in the proposal about the implementation plan of the proposals being recommended. I was wondering if there is a role for a sort of implementation team of community volunteers to sort of work with ICANN staff on implementing the recommendations that the CCWG is putting forward or not. And another question I have is regarding the association of the Workstream 1 recommendations with the CWG stewardship proposal. I was wondering if there is any idea or vision to, I'm not sure if this would belong to Workstream 1 or Workstream 2, but is there any thinking towards sort of in the future assessing how effective the recommendations coming out of the Cross-Community Working Group on Accountability are, and whether they may need revisions, perhaps periodic revisions, before every scheduled IANA function review happens. I hope my questions were clear. Thanks.
Thanks, Amar. I guess these are excellent questions. With respect to the CWG relation, we have been asked to look at certain aspects that were relevant for the CWG. And although we don't yet have consensus recommendations, our group has addressed all the requests that we received from the CWG and built them into our report. And we have not heard any concerns from CCWG members that could speak against the adoption of exactly these recommendations. So I am more than confident that all CWG requests will make its way into our final set of recommendations. With respect to reviewing what we have done, we don't have a dedicated review with respect to the work that we're currently conducting, yet we are suggesting that the reviews stemming from the affirmation of commitments, the ATRT reviews, for example, would make its way into the ICANN bylaws and would thereby be perpetuated. So there will be reviews for accountability topics. We're also recommending to make the IANA functions review requested by the CWG a golden bylaw so that this review can't be sunset. With this, I think we are addressing exactly your concerns, i.e. to make sure that the accountability in ICANN is regularly reviewed and that the ICANN board has to be transparent about the implementation of the recommendations or any issues speaking against the adoption of such recommendations stemming from regular reviews. With respect to the implementation, we do have a plan that speaks to the implementation prior and post-transition. That comes from the Workstream 1, Workstream 2 distinction, and our group is working on the basis of establishing higher-level recommendations first, and as time permits, going to a greater level of granularity or detail. So we certainly can't think of every minute detail because our work is so all-encompassing when it comes to ICANN's accountability that, you know, if we wanted to be that accurate, we would surely need a few more years to work. So implementation oversight is built into our thinking. So at one stage, we have to pass on our recommendations to the chartering organization for adoption, and then we'll pass on to the ICANN board, which then passes them on or adopts them and passes them on to NDIA. And certainly there will be questions when it comes to implementation, and we need to make sure, and we will make sure, that an implementation oversight team, the composition of which is yet to be determined, will make sure that the implementation is done in the spirit of the original CCWG deliberations and recommendations.
Great. Thanks, Thomas. I must, in the interest of keeping us moving through the agenda, move us on to the next item now, but that's a very comprehensive answer, and I can see it's been helpful to Amar and I'm sure others as well. So thank you for that. Obviously, given that we skipped item four, we'll now go back to item four, which deals with the other cross-community working group running of substance, of significant substance running at the moment. That's not to suggest that others running are not important, but as you know, this work is coming to a head rather rapidly under item four, the cross-community working group on the IANA stewardship transition. Just remind everyone why these are on the agenda. They're on the agenda because we are a chartering organization for both of these cross-community working groups, and therefore we'll have to ultimately review and approve the work. And so the objective of having these as rolling items on here, in particular given the substance, importance, and relatively high speed at which these are operating, is to make sure that councillors aren't in any way surprised by the outcomes and the direction of work and the content of the work, and that you're able to keep your groups fully informed. So with respect to item four and the cross-community working group to develop the transition proposal, the public comment period closed yesterday, and comments are now being processed. There are in the region of 50 public comments being received. So it's a healthy input to that public comment period, notwithstanding the fact that it was shorter than the standard 30-day public comment period as opposed to 40. And as I say, those comments will be are being systematically processed as we speak. The intention is to review those comments, take any additional work that's been done in the interim during the public comment period, synthesize those, and generate a final proposal comfortably ahead of the Buenos Aires meeting, such that that proposal can, in principle, be brought to the chartering organizations at their meetings in Buenos Aires. Clearly, that's us. So we will and should expect to receive that proposal ahead of the Buenos Aires meeting and for formal consideration, all things being well, at our council meeting on the Wednesday at Buenos Aires. So I guess there's two points here. One is, does anyone have any comments or questions around the work of the CWG stewardship at this stage? And also, what has anyone got any thoughts about what the council and through the council, the GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies should be doing to prepare for this? Any comments or thoughts on process and how we might manage and handle all of this? So if you've got any questions or comments on substance or process, I think that this is an opportunity to air these, because the next time we meet will be on the weekend sessions in Buenos Aires, and then when we meet as a formal council meeting will be on the Wednesday session. Philip Corwin, go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. I just wanted to note for the record that the business constituency, which of course I represent on council, filed a comment yesterday, and in the comment, the BC noted that the proposal that we were commenting on was not complete and had some major gaps in it, was dependent on the work of the CCWG on accountability for its accountability provision, so we couldn't judge how they were meshed yet. So the BC did request that the CWG stewardship consider doing another 40-day comment period on a more complete proposal after Buenos Aires. From what I've seen of the discussion on the stewardship email list, that is not their plan. Their plan is to take these comments into account and then send something final on to the ICG without further opportunity for community comments. So there is a concern there that I wanted to note. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. I haven't seen that PC input at this point, but I take your point. So in my capacity as co-chair of that CWG, I'll make a few remarks. I think on the latter, your point is very well taken. There is the dependency on the work of the accountability cross-community working group. It is the explicit intention of the stewardship cross-community working group to make its proposal contingent on the measures which it is dependent on being put in place by the accountability group. With respect to your other point, as to the completeness or not of the draft proposal currently out for public comment, I acknowledge there's a point there. The work has continued on matters of, I guess in my view, detail, but I accept that's open to interpretation as to the materiality of those points. And it's there has always been some element of risk that from the CWG's point of view, that some in the community may view those as sufficiently substantial that the draft proposal, as it becomes finalized, is materially different to the draft. It's my opinion that the draft is substantial, and whilst not complete in every detail, it's very clear where it's going. So there's a point to be taken there, and I think we have to certainly, as we process those public comments, see, recognize that and deal with that. So point noted, and appreciate you making it. Any other comments or questions, and in particular, if you have any concerns about, you know, how are you going to manage to bring your groups or your stakeholder groups or constituencies up to speed, any other comments on, as I said, substance or process relating to this item? All right. Well, please do make sure you are as familiar as possible with the work and as we go forward. Susan, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering with Fadi's announcement this morning how that might impact the both working groups. Because we, you know, some of this, I'm sure, have, you know, the thought process has been around Fadi being here, you know, in the community to lead this transition, having an unknown quantity that we would hand this over to now to make that transition or to, you know, maybe the transition occurs and then is immediately put under their control after Fadi leaves, it seems like that could have a big impact, and I was just wondering what the thoughts were around that.
I think it's a really good question, and I'm sure it's something that's going to be on a lot of people's minds, Susan. Obviously, it's the news is just being digested. I had the privilege, I guess, of being on the so-called SOAC-SG leaders' call this morning, at which Fadi was personally present and announced his intention. I should say that there were at least three board members there, the chair, the deputy chair, and the chair of the new GTLD program committee, that's Bruce, Shireen, and Steve. And all three of those and others emphasized, Fadi emphasized a couple of points. One, he's not leaving immediately. He's around until March or so next year. Two, the institution is bigger than the person. And should, in any event, be able to cope. I think it's an obvious question to ask and an interesting point. I guess you could say that, and you sort of touched on that in your remark, is that it may be implicit that the understanding is that in an ideal world and with a fair wind, the transition is complete by the time he steps down. But it nevertheless goes to your point then that the incoming CEO will be taking over in a situation which is arguably significantly different. But so those are just some little bit of further information from the call this morning and perhaps a couple of personal thoughts, but it is something we need to digest, and I see Dan in the chat also recognizes the value of the question and the point. Okay. Well, let's move on then to the next item, which is that an update and really a discussion item. These are it's headed as a as an update, but in practice, it's a brief discussion item on a proposed change to the charter for the cross community working group, and I think the on internet governance. And I just make a point on something. You could just mute your mic for a moment. Thank you. Just make a point on process here, and that the proposal here is to consider a change to the charter, which Rafiq or Olivier or both will talk to in a moment. But really the opportunity here is for us to consider this, and providing there is no objection, which face value doesn't mean that there will be, but I won't presume that, we can simply accept that. If there is, I expect it would need to come to the council again as a motion. So just give you a heads up there as to the process, and let me hand over to, I know Rafiq is on the call, but I'm not sure if Rafiq or Olivier is going to address this. So whichever of you is ready and prepared, please make your remarks on this topic. Thanks. Olivier, Rafiq will lead. So go ahead, Rafiq.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yes. So yeah. Yeah. We sent this request a few weeks ago. So maybe because maybe to give just the background is that when we started this working group. In the beginning, we didn't have a charter, and then we worked on the charter, but that was before the cross-community working group on IANA stewardship and on ICANN accountability. So we didn't have the same, if I can say that, the same wording regarding the members of the cross-community working group. And we are trying here to be more open and to normalize like the other cross community working group, and we propose it as a change, so no cut. In addition, the cross community working group on internet governance will be open to any interested person as a participant. Participant maybe from a chartering organization, from a stakeholder not represented the cross-community working group on the internet governance, or maybe self-appointed. Participant will be able to actively participate in and attend all the cross-community working group meetings, work groups and sub-work groups. However, should there be a need for a consensus call or decision, such consensus call or decision will be limited to the cross-community working group on internet governance members appointed by the chartering organization. When the motion for the charter that was voted in LA meeting, in that time there was supposed that the several constituent stakeholder group to appoint a representative, but that didn't happen for all of them. And we had the situation that still we got members from the previous working group still participate and so on. So it's just here we are trying to normalize and to be aligned with what other cross-community working group are doing in terms of participant and members. OK. Okay.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much, Rafiq. And I think you make that point very clearly that this aligns the work of aligns the structure or plan with that, those of the other CWGs that we were just discussing a moment ago. Amma, I see you say no objection, but note that an amendment was made to motion for GNS to adopt charter CCWG specifically, and now that seems moot. Yeah. Okay, point, fair point. Olivier?
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Olivier Capin-Leblanc speaking, and my capacity is one of the co-chairs of that working group appointed by a co-chair appointed by the ALAC on this. It's just worth noting that the work of the group has continued and is ongoing, and this is effectively just to put things in line. The same question is being asked of the ALAC, and there were no objections.
And if I can add, same for the CCNSO too. So.
Thank you, Olivier. Thank you, Rafiq. Are there any other concerns or issues with this proposed change? In other words, any points of detail, or are there any objections? Okay, so just for the record, I'm going to make sure we deal with this properly. This is item 6.2 now. I'm going to ask if there are any objections to this proposed change in the charter. Okay, so if we could record for the minute that there are no objections. And we should note also that there is a need to appoint a council liaison to this working group, cross-community working group, and in fact I believe Carlos has volunteered for that. I'm not sure if there have been any other volunteers. I think it was Carlos who volunteered, so thank you for that. But I'll note that Carlos is not on the call, so unless there are any concerns with that, I think we can communicate that on the list to Carlos. That he it's acceptable for him to serve as liaison. Okay, good. Well, thank you, Rafiq and Olivier, for bringing us up to speed with the work, and in particular this point. You can confirm then that you can go ahead without an objection to that minor adjustment to the charter. Next item, item 7, deals with the progress and any issues arising out of the work of the cross-community working group on the use of country and territory names as TLDs. And I think we have Heather Forrest available to present to us and give us the update, any issues or concerns. So let me hand over to you, Heather, and we can hear from you.
Thank you, Jonathan, just to confirm that you hear me all right.
Yes, Heather, confirmed.
Marvelous. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Carlos and I serve as co-chairs, GNSO co-chairs of this cross-community working group, and Carlos is not able to be with us today, so has asked me to lead this update for you. What I'd like to do, we've prepared a very short set of slides. I'll go through those, but relatively rapidly, they contain links to various documents that are best pursued on your own time to the extent that you're interested to do so, and I will instead focus on two things primarily, really, the key substantive issues and any sort of obstacles or problems that we're facing, and then take any questions. May I confirm with Glenn or Marika or any staff, let's say, do I have control of the slides, or how should we do the slides?
Heather, this is Marika. I've made you a presenter, so you can move the slides for everyone. If you use the arrows at the bottom of the pod, you basically move
Perfect.
Them along as you speak.
Excellent, Marika. Thank you very much. This first slide presents a timeline of our work to date. You can see that this isn't exactly the fastest moving cross-community working group, albeit it's one with an issue that's proven politically and policy-wise quite sensitive. And you see it takes us up to today where we are in terms of our substantive work. I'll leave this to you to review on your own, save to say that I point out what's happened between Singapore and now. You may recall from the GAC communique of Singapore that the GAC recommended cooperation with this cross-community working group, and I'll say something as to substance as to where we are with that in a moment. The group is led by this strawman options paper, let's say. It's capturing as we go the group's work. It's very much a work in progress. And there are, if you like, at this stage, three principal sections to this options paper. The one deals with the context, and this has proven significantly more challenging and controversial than I anticipated, simply understanding the background and the history of how policy on country and territory names has come to be at the point that it currently is, and in particular the removal of country and territory names in various manifestations from the current round of new GTLD expansion. Second substantive section in the paper deals with definitions, and one of these is country and territory names. And this is also proving relatively difficult. This does not surprise me as an issue, given that the predecessor of this cross-community working group is a study group that was formed by the CCNSO. I served on that study group to represent the GNSO, and this very issue really occupied the bulk of the study group's time. What do we, if you like, this goes to scope, what do we limit our work to? You'll see here in the slide the question that the group faces, and one of the points that I would like to have some feedback from formally or informally is the definition of country and territory names. Now, this very much goes to the scope of what the group is doing, and it also goes to the actual recommendations. To the extent that we wish to define country and territory names more broadly than those are defined, or perhaps more narrowly than those are defined in the applicant guidebook, that of course changes the measure of our inquiry, what we actually are looking at within this group in terms of making recommendations as to future policy in relation to those names. I'll leave that there for the moment and perhaps answer questions about that at the end. And finally, our first true point of substance, if you like, is this initial, perhaps what you might say, easiest, although perhaps not intuitive, representation of country and territory names, which is the two-letter country codes. There's been a fair amount of work in explaining the relationship of that policy to now to the ISO 3166-1 standard, simply summarizing the status quo, which is to say that two-letter codes in ASCII were removed from eligibility in the current round. And then options for future policy, what we do with two-letter codes. We started with two-letter codes because it was generally thought that that would perhaps be easier than starting with names. So building up from two-letter codes, three-letter codes, and names. What I will do is I'll post to the council list. We have a table of options, and I would very much like your input from the stakeholder groups and constituencies within the GNSO for your thoughts on how we deal with two-letter codes. Specifically, what we're looking for is input on three things. What do you think about the way that we've articulated the options? What do you believe the benefits of each of the stated options might be and the burdens? Donna, in relation to your question, this particular CWG, its charter is limited specifically to the top level. So, yes, we're only dealing with the top level. As I say, I'll post to the list this options chart for you, and I would be very grateful to have some input from your constituencies and stakeholder groups to take back with Carlos to this group. In terms of the next steps, and this is helpful in identifying some stumbling blocks and some problems, one of the issues that we have in carrying out this work, clarifying what we're doing and dealing with definitions, which is quite a fundamental point to have come this far in a year and we're still not quite agreed on what country and territory names are, that's proving to be a problem. I suspect that the CCNSO and we may have differing interpretations as to what country and territory names should be defined to include or not include. There is also the matter of the GAC communique from Singapore and the overlap, very significant overlap, of the work of this particular cross-community working group and the working group within the GAC on geographic names. That GAC working group is working very broadly at, or looking very broadly at, geographic names, which, of course, would include logically country and territory names. Olga Cavalli chairs that working group. She has not, and is in fact a member of this cross-constituency working group. We walked away from Singapore thinking that, and certainly having read the communique, that there would be some sort of increased communication between the two groups or cooperation, and that certainly hasn't been the case. Olga has just recently started attending the cross-community working group's calls, and at this point, cooperation is fairly one-way in a sense that Olga reports back to the GAC working group as to what we're doing, and we don't have a great deal of visibility as to what's happening in the GAC or how we deal with this overlap. So I raise that to Council as a significant issue, along with the scope issue. Another thing I'd like to point out as a significant challenge is the GNSO is a chartering organization of this group along with the CCNSO. The CCNSO routinely has a number of participants on our calls, and GNSO participation is significantly lower. And my concern, I raise this to Council, I think it's important that it be minuted, is that if we don't have GNSO participation, there's a risk that the outcome is not one that fully expresses the full range of GNSO perspectives on this issue. I'm very happy to point you to Lars, who supports our group to the extent that you know anyone in your constituencies or stakeholder groups who would like to attend. By all means, that's very welcome, and Lars can get the details to you. With that, I'll turn it to questions.
Thanks, Heather. Go ahead, Donna.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, Heather. So while this work is aimed at the top level, the registry stakeholder group are having somewhat of a battle, and have had a battle with staff and the GAC for some time now about the use of country codes at the second level. And we've kind of progressed through a continuum, I suppose, where all two characters were reserved. And we've got to a point now where unless there's comment or objection at the second level from an individual government, most of those letter-letter combinations can be used at the second level. And I think there's perhaps we could benefit from some of the work that you've done
around use of country codes, and if you have definitions of those, it could be useful to us in trying to manage the challenge that we have with some of the individual governments saying that we can't use certain strings at the second level, which one is .cn for China, IT for Italy. So there's a few that are still kind of sitting there as outliers. On country and territory names at the second level, requests have gone to ICANN through the RCEP to use those country and territory names at the second level in TLDs, but that we had a discussion about this on the registry call yesterday. Despite requests going in over 12 months ago, we still can't move forward at the second level on country and territory names because the GAC is now developing a database, and we don't understand what that database will contain, and we don't understand what process that the GAC will come up with in terms of the use of country and territory names at the second level. So while your work is aimed at the top level, I think there could be some benefits, certainly for the registries, to have a conversation with you about definitions or any work that you've done that can kind of help us at the second level. So I'd be interested in having a conversation offline with you on that, Heather. Thanks.
Jonathan, may I respond briefly?
Jonathan,
yes, please, Heather, go ahead.
Donna, thank you very much for your comments, and I'll say something very quickly to each. I have very serious concerns about the utility of this cross-community working group in terms of the fact that we have a very, very limited charter, and we have all of these other activities that are happening in the environment, in the broader environment, the GAC, activities happening at the second level. And I'm not really sure how useful this cross-community working group's outcomes are going to be, to the extent that, look, this group is chartered to come up with a framework, or first to establish whether a framework is possible, a framework is workable, in terms of the use of country and territory names at the top level. And to the extent that we have a GAC proposal that completely differs from the direction that this cross-community working group is taking, whether that be different at the top level or the second level, that concerns me. And I honestly, I don't have the answer to that question. I throw that out to the wider community and say, what do we do here? In terms of your comments about the RCEP process and the GAC developing a database, it's interesting that you say that. We were told on our last call 2 days ago, I won't say that necessarily the concept of a database was denied, but we weren't given very clear answers as to where that working group stands on putting together the database, how it would be used. It was all very, very muddy, and I don't quite know whether there's agreement within the GAC as to how that process is happening. So I have some very broad concerns as to what we as a community are doing disparately in this area, and I turn to the guidance of much more experienced and wiser counselors than I to see through where we go from here. Thank you, Jonathan.
Okay, thanks, Heather. There's a couple of things. At a very mundane level, I'm mindful of time and where we are in the agenda here, but I can see there's clearly some the council's job in all of this or critical role is as a manager of the process. And it feels like we've got clearly, as you've highlighted, some process and substance questions. I'm going to try and pull some threads out of this and make sure we do keep moving and make some progress here. It feels like one action is for the registries to talk directly with this group, which may or may not impact the utility of its work. I suspect the utility is in part impacted by the various issues you've highlighted, including at its most basic, the charter of the group. But nevertheless, let's agree to have that conversation will take place. It feels to me like the council has to talk with the GAC about this, and it has to be in that sense escalated And so I think there's an action on the council leadership, myself, to reach out to the GAC leadership and open up a channel of communication here. I think I heard you say earlier, Heather, that there are some issues of substance in the work of the group that you would like help or input from, questions for the stakeholder groups and constituencies. So if those could be articulated and sent to the council list, and then we can use the councillors as a channel to get that input. And then there's the point of participation, which we need to be aware of. So I think we can, at minimum, put out a call to council seeking additional participation from GNSO members to in your group's work to keep that. So I hope that our minute takers have managed to capture those four items, and we'll try and work with you, Heather, to make some more progress on it. But your concerns are noted, and it's clearly something that we'll have to keep alive to and work with you on. All right. Thank you very much, Heather. I'm going to keep us nudging forward. We're slipping a little bit in time. So our next item we have is a discussion and any issues arising from the work of the group working on the access to curative rights mechanism, PDP, for NGO and INGOs. And I think we're going to get a status update and a highlight of any current issues. Philip, go ahead. Philip Corwin, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I forgot to unmute myself. Can you hear me now? Hello? Hello?
Yes, Philip, we hear you. Thanks.
Okay, fine. Yes, I'm going to give a brief update, and Peter Renforth, my co-chair of the working group, is on the call, as well as Mason Cole, who's the council liaison to the GAC, and they may want to add to the discussion. Our working group, after making very substantial and rapid progress through the spring, has kind of foundered at the moment, and what we have foundered on is the issue of determining the precise scope of sovereign immunity for IGOs. To remind you of where we've come so far, we determined to eliminate consideration of INGOs, non-governmental organizations, because they have no problem accessing the current CRPs and no sovereign immunity issue. We've determined that IGOs, which have exercised their rights to protection under Article 6 of the Paris Convention, do have standing to use the UDRP and now the URS, and in fact we found examples of IGOs using the UDRP in the past. We decided that we would not determine whether URS should be consensus policy, that was outside the scope of our small working group and should be left to later. And I want to get back to that issue in particular at the end of this discussion, but I don't want to confuse things right now. Where we have had difficulty is in determining the precise scope of sovereign immunity for IGOs. Staff arranged for conversation input from one legal expert, but it was not satisfactory. We're looking at some other documents. And this only comes up in the rare circumstance that a IGO would bring a UDRP and would prevail as complainant in the UDRP, and then the registrant would exercise its right, which is in the current UDRP, of appealing to a court of national jurisdiction. That's the rare but possible circumstance in which this issue would arise. we're trying to get additional legal input on this, and also Mason is taking steps to try to arrange for a meeting with members of the GAC and possibly some IGO representatives in Buenos Aires to discuss this issue because of its broader international political implications. The one other thing I'd mention is that on April 29th, we, after some considerable waiting period, received a response from the GAC to questions we had posed to it several months earlier, actually in December 2014. So there was a 4.5-month gap between asking the questions and getting a response, and the GAC's response was not all that responsive or helpful, I must unfortunately say. For example, in its communique issued at the end of the Los Angeles meeting, the GAC had expressed its view that the cost of access to curative rights processes for IGOs should be free or nominal. We requested their opinion of whether the current fees for the URS and the UDRP, roughly $500 and $1,500 for a single expert in the UDRP, were fit within the definition of nominal, and they responded they had no position on whether the current fees were nominal. So they've asked us that the fees should be nominal, but they don't seem to have a position on what constitutes nominal. So that's where we are. I anticipate that whether or not we get the meeting in Buenos Aires with the GAC and other principals we'd like to discuss this with, that the working group will pick up speed post-Buenos Aires and that we will have a final report and recommendations available for comment substantially before the Dublin meeting. And that's my report on that, and if Petter or Mason have any additional comments, I welcome them.
Thanks, Philip. And while I wait for a hand from either of those two, I see Petter, your hand is up. Please go ahead. Sounds like a dropped line. We may have lost Petter. Petter, have we lost you?
No. Sorry, I'm here. Thanks. It was a very good summary of our current status, and I just wanted to add that the late response we got from GAC was rather neutral on all of our questions, and if looking at it on the positive side of that, there was no specific no's and don'ts on what we suggested, but that's also why we hope to have a smaller, more informal meeting where we can discuss more openly in details. For instance, on the written response on our the national jurisdiction issues was just that there are non-judicial means to ensure due process such as arbitration, which the GAC believes should be considered in more detail. And that's one of the issues we want to get more specific input on, as UDRP process as such is a kind of arbitration. So the details of the next step we want to discuss. But otherwise, we think within the working group that we have come to pretty broad and clear conclusion internally on what we think about our topic. So once we have got more specific clear reply from GAC, and we also await from further response from our IGO questionnaire, then we can, as said, come to our first conclusion and proposal. Thanks.
Thanks, Petter, and thanks, Philip, before you. I want to make sure I and we are clear on what might happen next. What I'm understanding is you've given us an update, you've highlighted the issues, you are currently planning on dealing with those issues yourself, and you are not specifically asking for the council or the council leadership to take any action at this stage. Can I confirm that, or if not, can you give me a specific request of any help or assistance you'd like to achieve what you're trying to do? Go ahead.
I think the only help we're requesting is being undertaken by Mason right now, which is to attempt to arrange for a meeting between the working group and the GAC and other interested parties in Buenos Aires so we can have a full and frank discussion and get their input in particular on the broader political aspects of the sovereign immunity issue that we're dealing with. Other than that assistance, we're not requesting any council assistance at this point in time. And as Petter said, we do have a pretty good sense of where we think we're going to wind up, but we don't want to move forward to a final report and recommendations until we give the GAC and other concerned parties an opportunity to meet with us in Buenos Aires.
Okay, good. Thank you, Philip. And that's clear then. But then just to highlight my point to Mason in the chat, what I'd like to do is make sure we are clear on the sort of scope of GNSO GAC-related issues. So Marika and Mason, between us, would like to make sure we try and capture that, which is effectively will become our agenda either formally in for our session with the GAC when the GNSO meets with the GAC and or with any perhaps smaller meetings that we have between the GNSO chairs group and the GAC chairs group or any others. But it would be good to get a scope of activities, and including things like our work on the communique. So thanks.
Yes, and as Mary just noted in the chat room, bringing this up in the full meeting with the GAC could be useful as well. There was one other informational item I wanted to address before winding this up. As I mentioned, at a point in the working group's deliberations, we addressed the question of whether it would be proper for us to make any recommendation regarding whether URS should become a consensus policy that is applicable to incumbent GTLDs as well as new GTLDs, and we determined rather broadly that that would not be appropriate. That was not the focus of our working group, and that was properly to be left to whatever PDP might occur after receipt of the staff issues report on the new GTLD RPMs, which I believe is scheduled for September 30th of this year. I wanted to note as an informational matter, I have not yet brought this up within the BC, so I'm not speaking for the BC, but last week ICANN put out the .travel renewal registry agreement for comment, and in that registry agreement, they have written in the URS as being applicable to .travel, which is an incumbent GTLD, and if that can be done with .travel, that could be done with the renewal of any incumbent GTLD, and I have personal concerns that that might be creating a consensus policy through the contracting process with private parties. So I wanted to bring that contract to the council's attention, and it may be a topic for future discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Philip. We should note that. So if we could capture that as a possible future discussion, the introduction of changes to the registry agreement via private negotiation relative to the policy development process and the appropriateness of that. We can have that as a prospective discussion item at some point in the future. Thanks, Philip. Thank you, others, for your contributions there. let's keep things moving then. We're just about on track here. And now under item 9, we will hear from the group that's worked on, the discussion group that's worked on the progress of new GTLD subsequent rounds, which is coming to a point of a prospective issue report. You would have seen an email to the council list earlier today, but let me hand over to Brett, I suspect, who is supported by Jeff and possibly Liz. Brett, go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. Can you hear me?
Yes, Brett, we hear you well.
Terrific. Well, thank you for the time on the agenda. Over the last year, I have acted as chair of the new GTLD discussion group together with co-chairs Jeff Newman and Liz Williams, and we've been very capably supported by staff, specifically here, Steve Chan has done a lot of the heavy lifting and work for us. Our group just started last June at the London meeting. Our goal here is to wind up the group in Buenos Aires after a year's time and turn the work back over to the council. That's why I wanted time here in May to basically give you a high-level overview of what is coming so you can begin to think about it for the June meeting, consult with your various constituencies, and take the time that will be required to go through the documents. As Jonathan mentioned, Steve yesterday sent a link to a lot of the material documents. Let me drop it here in the chat as well. You can catch up on some of the work and see the draft documents. The purpose of our group was to capture the experience of various members of the community around new GTLDs, to think about issues that might be appropriate for future policy work, think about places where we might make course corrections in the new GTLD program when we do it again. It was an open group. We've had initial broad participation from, I think, every constituency within the GNSO. Our first task was to come up with a list of issues that people had from the past round and think about what we should do better for the future. We captured over 100 discrete issues. Some of them are very large in scope. Some of them are quite narrow in scope. We did not try to distinguish between what was important to the various members of the community. If they had an issue, we put it up on the board and have captured it in our thoughts. We tried to phrase all the issues for subsequent work in a neutral manner. We asked participants to phrase their questions in a way that did not prejudge any outcome or slant the question toward any specific position. And I'm happy to say that everyone contributed in that spirit. By the end of 2014, I think we had a fairly comprehensive and robust list of issues. We have spent the time since then refining that list. We have organized that list against the council's previous policy work that gave rise to the last round of new GTLDs. And we have a handful of documents that we're going to pass to the council for consideration in June. At the June meeting, we anticipate forwarding a motion to the council that will ask for the creation of an issue report to look at the possible creation of a PDP on new GTLDs. We have a draft charter for that group that we will circulate to the council. The draft charter also has the issues as we have captured them, as we have targeted them to the previous policy work. The nice thing is that Steve and ICANN staff have played material roles in preparing that, and they will also be charged with creating the issue report if the motion passes. So I think they have a very thorough understanding of what needs to be done. Along the way, we considered whether to ask the council to create one PDP or multiple PDPs. The consensus of the group was to go with one PDP and possibly leave it to the chair of that policy development group, whether to divide into subgroups or not. But we didn't try to prejudge that up front. But we did want to have one PDP and not multiple PDPs. We've asked the working group, if it's created, to in the charter, to take account of the work that is going on in other aspects of the community, to take account of the AOC reviews, for example, to be open to adding or dropping issues, and to be open to various ways of working one group or possible subgroups. So that's what is coming. You see on the list here the email that Steve kindly sent yesterday, and you've got a link to where you can see the deliverables inside our working wiki. So with that, I'll turn it over to any questions or possible additional comments from Jeff Newman, who's our co-chair, who's also on the call, or Steve Chan, if I missed anything.
Thanks, Brett. Jeff, Steve, would you like to come in first? And any other councillors with questions or comments, please raise your hand in the Adobe Connect.
This is Audrey. I'm not on the Adobe Connect. Can you put me in the queue?
Yeah, this is Jeff. I'm not on Adobe Connect either.
Jeff, you go ahead, and then we'll have Donna followed by Audrey.
Yeah, I think, thanks. I think Brett gave an excellent summary, and we'd really love for you all to kind of review the documentation before the Buenos Aires meeting. We're going to have a session there to talk specifically about the issues that we've come up with and to talk about the next steps. And we have divided, even though we haven't recommended necessarily that subgroups be created, we have divided up the issues into five or so categories of types of issues, so that would help guide a future chair of the working group, of the PDP working group, if in fact the PDP is formed. So we're excited about it, and we're looking forward to getting started if that's what the council chooses to do. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna, go ahead, Donna.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, Brett and Jeff, for the work that's been done previously on this. I guess I have I'm aware that given that there's more than 100 issues that have been identified, and other work that's going on by staff and the affirmation of commitments, I guess I have an overarching question of how does this all fit together? And two, I think by reviewing or changing policy, there's a potential that a next round is going to look significantly different from the first round, which may require changes to the registry agreement. I'm not suggesting that it will, but I'm just trying to work out in my mind, how do we address that at a meta level? What happens if the next round turns out to be significantly different from this round? You have different registry agreements to manage, and I just wonder whether that's a consideration that will be looked at some part during this process. Is it an issue that next round TLDs look or have different requirements to the round that's just gone before? So I'm just interested in whether any thought's been given to that and how that will be managed. Thanks, Brett.
Thanks, Donna. Go ahead, Brett.
To Donna's point, there will be a subsequent round, and it will look very much like the past round if we don't do anything about it. And that could be a logical choice. Perhaps we want to do nothing, in which case the existing policy is that at the end of this, after some minor course corrections, that would be non-policy related we would launch again. If we do have revisions, I do contemplate that subsequent revisions around the way registry operated would have to be in the registry agreements. That might be the only way to have those, have effect. And then there would be a legitimate question as to why you would treat new people differently than old people. The new people would then be the old people then. And I think maybe there's a policy question there. And so I that would probably have to be addressed by the group. Is it fair that, DOT 2012 has a different registry agreement than, DOT 2018? Perhaps that's a, I don't know if that raises your, if that addresses your question, but I think that that's an issue that is raised and probably ought to go in the policy development group's list of things to consider.
Great. Thank you, Brett. I'm going to bring Avery in now.
Thanks. This is Avery. Sorry, I'm on a bus, so it may be noisy. I have two things. One, I think in terms of Donna's question, I think we're already in that situation with the incumbent TLDs versus the latest round, so it probably is a policy issue that needs to be explored. I had a question for Brett. In the working group, or in the discussion group, rather, we still had a bunch of stuff outstanding. You guys were working on revising the document. I didn't notice whether, I've been offline most of today, whether that revision and that revised document had been made available yet, whether the group has had a chance to review that, or is it all a fait accompli already? Thanks.
No, Avery, we have not circulated the version that we want to send to the council yet back to the discussion group. That will take place here toward A. Hopefully we'll get the community's blessing to do that. And if we don't, if there's pushback on it, we'll obviously not be able to get this teed up for the Buenos Aires meeting, and that's certainly a possible outcome. But we're going to work toward getting all of this wrapped up with the blessing of the discussion group at least 10 days before Buenos Aires. So that's our goal.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. And thanks, Avery, for the questions. Got a couple more in the queue, and then I think we'll probably have to close at that point. So, James, go ahead.
Thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you, John. Thanks, Brett, Jeff, and Liz for the work on this. Donna's question, I think, just building on that, I think Donna has hit on a very important point, which is the degree of difference between this next round that we can anticipate versus what was recently launched. And I think that, one of the key considerations that have to be included in these discussions is the competitive impact of that. Of any new policies, any new operational burdens or requirements that are put on these second rounds, and particularly because those all flow down to the registrar, and we are the ones that have to manage the customer confusion when these things are, implemented in an unusual or non-standard way. I think that there has to be a great deal of consideration given to some degree of inertia and standardization, not only within this batch, but uniformity with the previous batch wherever possible. I think that has to carry a significant amount of weight, and if we deviate from that, I think that that has to be for a very compelling reason. Otherwise, I think we're just continuing the fragmentation of this industry and this market, and it just results in further confusion. So I'm glad to hear that you are thinking about that, Brett, in this work, and I think it's an important element that that I know our stakeholders will be looking at as this new round, the PDPs that affect this new round will start to take shape. Thank you.
Sorry, I had an audio glitch there. Thanks, James. That sounds like an important theme emerging there. Go ahead, Susan.
This is Susan Calgucci for the record. I haven't reviewed the matrix, and I will, but I was concerned and wanted to know whether you've included some of the negative behaviors of some of the new registries that have launched, you know, dot sex, predatory pricing in general, and then forcing domain names, free domain names upon registrars or registrants, such as in the .xyz. Are those issues that are included in this matrix?
Hey, this is Jeff. Can I answer? Can I respond to that?
Go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, great. Yeah, sorry, I'm not on Adobe. So, Susan, that's a great question. And if you look at the when you look at the matrix, what we tried to do was to jot down all the issues that the group had come up with in a kind of neutral manner to not presuppose or to prejudge the activities. So there are questions or issues in there about pricing and whether it should be more regulated or less regulated in that kind of way. But not in the they weren't as specific to point to one specific registry or one specific action, but there should be questions in there that refer to the activities that a PDP working group can discuss, whether that's positive, negative, or whether any changes should come of that. I hope that helps.
Thanks. I'll look for those then. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Brett, for that update. It sounds like there's quite some substance going to be discussed here, and this is just the start of it, but it's very useful to have that update and start getting the thoughts flowing on all of this. I think, well, I'll move us on then to, well, actually, the further item. Not, I think we can skip 10 for a moment and try and come back to that, but I do think it's important that you hear an update relating to item 11, the latest progress on the GNSO review, and I believe we are fortunate to have Jen Wolfe with us here to give you an update and for you to raise any questions or points. 10-minute slot at most, that would be great.
Thanks, Jonathan. Can you hear me?
Yes,
can
Jen.
Can you hear me?
Can hear you.
Okay, great. Great. Thank you for making the opportunity for me to present today. And I apologize. I'm in my car, so if there's background noise, I apologize for that. And I am not on Adobe Connect. Larissa Gernick is also on the call for staff, and I know she'll be advancing the slides for everyone. So to provide you an update on the status of the GNSO review working party, since our last report, we have held 2 meetings to review the draft report that was provided by Westlake, who is the independent examiner. We met first on May 4th and then had a wrap-up call on May 12th. During these calls, we provided detailed comments and feedback to the Westlake team on their draft report. And Westlake has been developing the draft report after taking into consideration our comments on the working text. So in other words, I want to make sure everyone understands, collectively, we as the working party have had 2 rounds of comments to Westlake throughout the drafting phase. Throughout all of this process, Westlake has been tracking all of the comments that have been made, and they are responding to each comment so that we have an understanding of what they have included in the subsequently revised report and what was not included and why. So that's been very helpful for us to work effectively in providing feedback, seeking clarity or consistency, and then understanding how that feedback was incorporated. So if there are future questions, we have a complete record to go back to understand how they have revised the report in this process. This is all available on the community wiki for the GNSO review, and staff will also be sharing links to this information. The draft report by Westlake will be issued for public comment on June 1st and will remain open for comments until July 20th. Several activities are planned to brief the community and make it easier to submit comments. These include updates and highlights from Westlake during the upcoming ICANN 53 meeting, a template to facilitate public comment response, the use of video and social media. The working party will meet in person during the ICANN meeting in Buenos Aires. We plan to use that time to analyze the draft recommendations made in more detail, to compare the recommendations with work already being done in the ICANN community, and be prepared to offer recommendations on steps forward based upon community response and feedback from the Structural Improvements Committee. The draft recommendations from Westlake are approximately 40 in length. They fall into four groups: participation and representation, continuous development, including the CDP process, transparency, and alignment with ICANN's future. So I invite you all to provide your feedback on the draft report during the public comment period, as well as during the ICANN meeting. And also, please let staff know if you would like a briefing during the upcoming ICANN meeting. Many of you have already expressed interest, and we thank you for that interest so that we can provide this update. Westlake will issue its final report on August 30th. I'm happy to answer any questions or provide any further updates.
Thanks, Jen, for that very crisp and thorough tour of the work that's been going and the opportunities to contribute further to it. Any comments, questions, input at this relating to the work of the GNSO Review Working Party? And sorry, I got cut off there. Any comments or questions relating to the work of the GNSO Review Working Party? Jen, I see no hands up in the chat. Are you sure no one, anyone got any points or questions? Well, that's very useful, Jen. We'll look forward to meeting with you in Buenos Aires. And I know you've had, as you said, substantial input via the Review Working Party online in your various meetings. I think that was very clear. Thank you for that presentation. And I know there's a link in the chat being provided by Carla. So thank you to the staff, Larissa, and others who've worked on this as well. Ross, item 11 then. Item 10. We'll go back to item 10 and just deal with an update on the GNSO drafting team working to respond to the new ICANN meeting strategy. And I think we're going to hear from Marika. I know Falk has also been involved here, but he's been away for a while. And so let's hear from Marika as to the progress and what the expectations of next steps are. Thank you, Marika.
Thanks, Jonathan. So this is Marika, and just to note, indeed, I think Volker's on the call as well as other members of the drafting team. So if any point they want to speak up or chime in, feel free to raise your hand or interrupt me. But just very briefly, as I know we're running out of time, and you know, this information has also been circulated, I think, already twice on the mailing list. The drafting team was basically formed after Singapore to look at the new ICANN meeting strategy and see how the GNSO-related meetings would fit into that new strategy. So what the drafting team did is basically develop a kind of skeleton framework for the different meetings, so the meeting A, B, and C, and try to map into those our current structure, which I think in broad lines applies to the meeting A and C, and then discuss how to deal with meeting B, which is the one that is very different from the current format as it is reduced to 4 days compared to our current 6 to 7 days sometimes meetings or for some even longer. So basically what we've done is initially just look at indeed what was the guidance from the meeting strategy working group, what did they already map as part of their work as the guidance for each of those days, and then highlight, and that's what you see in yellow for each of those boxes, what will be the GNSO-focused meetings proposed for those days. And then we went even further and went into actual dividing the time up into time blocks and to try to provide a little bit more detail around how those meetings could or should or would look like. So the whole idea behind this framework is to be able to share that with other SOs and ACs, to be able to have a conversation ideally in Buenos Aires to understand what their thinking is, to make sure as well that at the end of the day when we agree on how the GNSO-related meeting should look, that we don't have any major clashes, and especially for those parts of the meetings that are focused on inter-community work, so join meetings with other SOs and ACs or cross-community working group sessions, that we make sure that we carve out the same part of the day in the same time frames to actually make that happen. So the reason why we're presenting this now here is to allow for all of you, as well as your stakeholder groups and constituencies, to have a look at that and provide the drafting team with any feedback you have that you think needs to be factored in or addressed before we actually take this to the different SOs and ACs for further discussion. So I think the action item here is to ask you, and you know, ideally within the next week at the latest, or of course if you already have any feedback during this call, to share that on the council mailing list so the drafting team can look at that and incorporate that. And as I said, the next step basically is then to finalize or update this draft and share that with all of the SOs and ACs. Our expectation is that it's probably already going to be a topic of conversation on the Friday evening session that is held for stakeholder for SOAC and CGC chairs. So that may already be an initial opportunity to exchange some views. And then the drafting team has sent invitations to the different SOs and ACs, asking them to identify who from their groups are responsible or dealing with this issue. And you know, they may, I think certain groups are following similar approaches as we've been doing. So basically that would allow then the group to compare notes, and hopefully after Buenos Aires, it would then allow the GNSO to kind of finalize the broad framework for the meetings that would, the new meeting strategy that would start in 2016. So I think that's in a nutshell what is there. I said most of the information is in the document. So if you have any questions or any comments, feel free to share them now. Or I said I'm happy to send it out again after the call as well, and maybe give people a specific deadline by which comments should be received before we share it further with the other SOs and ACs.
Thanks, Marika. I'd like to then just capture two action items, one from Mary on the previous item, making sure that the stakeholder groups and constituencies are aware there is an opportunity to meet with Jennifer Wolf and the working party during Constituency Day in Buenos Aires, and then two, your urgent request for feedback on this format, meeting format, prior to it being circulated more broadly. And I note that the recognition from Donna that it's important to start to work on the practicalities of the implementation of this and the impact on ICANN meetings. Any other comments or questions at this point relating to item 10 with GNSO drafting team and their work on the meeting strategy? Marika?
Yeah, just Rick, if I maybe make one more point, and inspired by what Donna has posted, because I think it's especially important for people to review the meeting B. And I said before, I think on the meetings A and C, I think you'll see as well that the schedule is relatively similar to, you know, what we currently do, the amount of time that groups will have available. But as the meeting B is really shortened, and the idea is the focus is really on, you know, policy development activities as well as a part outreach. Not only will the council have to make sacrifices in what they will spend their time on, the same will apply for stakeholder groups and constituencies. So I think it's well important for everyone to start thinking ahead. Indeed, are there other ways in which you can do maybe certain administrative parts of your work? And some of the suggestions we've already included here from a GNSO council perspective would be, are there certain updates or briefings we could do in advance through webinars or other mechanisms? But it's probably something as well that will need to be done, you know, by all the groups, as you know, the clear direction is the meeting will be 4 days. There's no, you know, before sessions or after sessions, and we'll all need to be able to fit the work into that time frame.
Thanks, Marika. Any other comments or questions at this stage? All right, let's move on to any other business then, the final item on the agenda today. We do have item 12.1, which is an update on the Buenos Aires meeting planning, but I covered that when we dealt with our action items earlier and reminded you of the Tuesday evening session required. So you should be aware of that. You see before you the full detail of the schedule there. I encourage you to read that, you know, offline or via the email, and come back as soon as possible if you have any concerns, questions, or issues you'd like to raise there. Is there anything else under item 12.2, any other business that anyone would like to raise for the council at this stage? Susan, go ahead. No audio yet, Susan.
Sorry, I was desperately trying to take myself off mute. So, sort of late in the meeting, but I am concerned with ICANN's reaction to the IPC letter concerning .sex and how they punted and sent that off to the FTC and the Canadian equivalent. And I do think that that's a concern for the GNSO. It's definitely a concern for the BC. And we may want to have some sort of discussions around that in Buenos Aires, put it on the agenda. I'm not sure that was the responsible thing for ICANN to do, and they haven't really responded to the community concerns, but asking government to respond, which is a concern when, you know, here we're trying to prepare for taking on the IANA transition and being the mature organization that we should be to do that. So I was hoping we could maybe schedule time for discussion.
Okay, Susan, that's an interesting point. And if I could ask you to think carefully, look at the BA schedule and think about where best this fits. Don't necessarily answer now, but come back to us as to, is this a discussion with Buddy? Is it a discussion with the board? Where, under which item, or is it something we need to, and of course we have prep sessions. So if you could think about where you see that fitting best, and in fact that might seed further discussion for those items anyway, which we need to get moving on creating content for those sessions. So thanks for raising that, and let's take that approach if you wouldn't mind.
Will do.
Next in the queue. Thanks, Susan. James, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. James here. And I agree with Susan. We could put that on the agenda for Buenos Aires for more substantive discussion in the council, and certainly not rushing to the defense of .sucks. But I would caution just one part of Susan's last statement. I would caution all councilors and liaisons perhaps to resist linking any one particular issue or the resolution of any particular issue to the IANA transition and overall accountability and suitability of IANA to become the IANA functions operator. And my concern is that outside parties are listening, and we're playing with fire here. I think that that if we say that, you know, unless ICANN does X, you know, you know, that it's clear that they're not ready to assume this, and I think it is something that is something I think that we should avoid as counselors, and I think it's something that we should push back into our SGs and constituencies. That it's not necessarily going to advance the issue. It's going to probably just drag down the IANA transition and drag that out. And I'm just pointing out, it's not a criticism or anything. It's just a note, maybe, of something I've been thinking about for a couple of weeks. Thanks.
Thanks, James. And I'm always mindful of not necessarily the content, but also the time, place, and context for any discussion, including when and whether that's appropriate at the council level and how we use our position as council and manager of the policy test and so on. But we do have, I'll remind everyone that the weekend sessions are, whilst they are managed by the council, they are GNSO sessions. So that's also something to think about in context, but of when and how these topics are covered. So good points all. Philip, I'll give you the privilege of being the last one to contribute because we are past the top of the hour by a couple of minutes. Go ahead, Philip.
Oh, just to respond briefly to James, you know, last week I was a witness before one of the congressional hearings. Steve Del Bianco with the BC was at both of them. We were not testifying for the BC, but for our organizations. But I think if you review what we said, people were not saying stop the transition until ICANN does this or that. They were, but they were expressing some concerns about existing operations, and I don't think we can be silent until the transition is completed, but I think at least the testimony at those hearings was pretty careful about how people were portraying their positions. Of course, we have no control about how third parties take our testimony and may use it in other contexts.
Okay, thanks, Philip. And to that, together with the chat, I think we've got the gist of the issue there. So that's helpful. And being mindful of the context, the overall context. All right, I'm going to have to bring this to a close now, given the time. Thank you very much. And it's been a very dense meeting, and although there were no motions, there were some issues of substance to cover. We've picked up a few actions along the way, including me, to make sure that we bring the minutes up to speed and get the actions out from this current call. So thanks very much, everyone. With that, we'll bring the meeting to a close, and obviously be seeing you all in the not-too-distant future in Buenos Aires.